football on Off the Ball.
There is an unpredictability about it. I mean, if there was a predictability about it, we'd all be drinking caipirinhas and daiquiris, as Pep suggested, but on Copacabana Beach, having just sort of taken the bookies to the cleaners.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
All right, this week's episode of Final One Standing, we've got a full house for you. Michael McCarthy, David Wilson, and Shane Hannan in studio. We've got Lee Phelps with us on the line. Gentlemen, a very good morning, good afternoon,
and good night.
How is everybody?
All good.
Straight off the bat, right, I need some advice. I know I can already, before I get into this, I can picture Mick is going to get angry halfway through as I start to explain this.
Me.
The concept of the emotional hedge. Is everybody familiar with this?
Yeah.
No. No. So I bet that your heart goes over your head, is it?
The opposite.
Right, the head goes over the heart.
Yes, so you bet against your own team.
Yes.
You can't lose.
To make yourself feel better.
So when the inevitable bad thing happens, you feel good about it. So a couple of weeks back, I looked at the odds for Aston Villa not to finish in the top four.
Oh, Jer.
And they
four
were actually
or
yeah,
five.
top four.
Oh, right, okay.
So there's a little bit of...
good chance of that.
A little bit of wiggle room here. And now I can cash out, basically having nearly doubled my money. The odds have come down, have shortened. It's like I'd get 60% plus my stake back. What should I do?
Not to finish in the top four.
Lee, are you allowed to give advice around stuff like this?
Yeah, let it ride. Let it ride. They're not going to finish in the top four. Let it ride.
See, if they win tonight, they, you know.
No, I'm being flippant. That's an interesting one, that.
At what point do you cash out so that you can start wanting your team to win again and not be...
Oh, no, I want them to win. If they,
I know, but...
I'd much rather lose this money.
But you have this nag in the back of your head, like, you know, that's like... Well, it's not too bad, I suppose, if Wolves beat them 3-0 on Friday Night Football.
Fifth, you still qualify for the Champions League, so that's my get-out-of-jail for this.
Okay.
Wolves win tonight, then you cash out?
Like, well, Wolves win tonight, you're not cashing out. You're like, sorry
that's the opposite.
I'm going to take the money at the end of the season when they absolutely don't finish.
Yeah.
You'd have to say Liverpool. I mean, in terms of the odds right now, it's 2-1 on Villa. This is top four. 4-7 Man United. 4-5 Liverpool. Chelsea have now drifted out to 5-2. So. The question is, I think Liverpool come on strong for the rest of the season. The question for me is, can Manchester United maintain this kind of form? I think Villa are susceptible. I don't think they'll power their way through, especially, you know, with other stuff going on for them. I'm always like, let it ride. I must admit, I'm not much of a kind of like cash out merchant. I just want to, if I've made the bet, I want to see it win.
I don't think I've ever cashed out.
But really, what the position you're in is you've got the best of both worlds here now. So take the money, watch Villa finish in the top five, and everyone's happy.
Emotional hedges are great, by the way. They generally tend to come through. I strongly recommend it as a way of gambling.
We've become too risk averse as a society. That's why we're only going back to the moon next month, Jer. So I would say hold on to that bet. Don't back out. No, stick with it.
And Puritan. We're very angry about St. Patrick having a pint. But anyway, that's another story for another day. I think that it's the top five race with like four teams for three places is... Thankfully, we have a title race. And for the first time in years, we have a relegation battle. So it's very much going to take its proper place as the third most important thing. We've been living and dying by the Champions League play, which is wrong in so many ways. But actually, it's a fascinating race because all the teams are so flawed. Like, United are in the prime position at the moment. But as Lee says, how long is that going to go? Villa are just like... The one thing I'd say about Villa is Emery teams go on runs. Now, they've had one already this year, but it can kind of happen out of nowhere. And the problem, say tonight now, such a problem because Villa are really struggling against the lesser teams without Youri Tielemans. If they play against better teams, that's more when Morgan Rodgers comes into it and has a bit more space. You don't need the unlocking of the defence by Youri Tielemans, but he's not back until after the international break. That's still a long time away. Mm. 4 or 5 more games at least. So it's they're hanging on, but I don't trust Chelsea and I don't trust Liverpool. Liverpool's performance against Forest might have been their worst of the season.
Mm.
and they won in the 97th minute. And I know that can cause a kick on, and that can be momentum, and that can start off things. But it's like we've been waiting for Liverpool to come alive all year, and it just it's worse they're getting.
Mm.
Yeah, no, that is fair. I mean, Chelsea at 5-2. I mean, they're on the same points as Liverpool. It's like, you know, and I know the thing is that there's fallibility in all these teams, isn't there? In all these teams we're mentioning, none of us are absolutely confident. So really, in that world, if you come into this market afresh, you'd have to back Chelsea at 5-2, given those other prices,
with the money,
because they're as likely as any of the others to go on a decent run. I know they probably won't, but then. None of us can say that Liverpool. I was really surprised by Liverpool. I mean, again, they're benefiting from the kind of statistical kind of analysis will now say, because you forget about the performance after a couple of weeks, that they've, you know, they're not conceding goals and they're winning games. It's like, geez, it was bad last weekend, wasn't it, for Liverpool? I mean, and you know, even the goal was a little bit suspect, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe they do start to motor. Villa's injuries are the other thing, aren't they? That you'd have to. You've already mentioned one of them, but obviously, you know, missing McGinn as well, and there's other players who are out.
Kamara
out as well, of course. So you know, it's when they come back. I think McGinn was 6 to 8 weeks, so that's probably mid March, maybe.
They're lucky; they could all come back around the same time. Well,
Tielemans more like mid April, I think. Kamara, he's probably out for the season.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, then it's not that deep a squad that they can unless the players that they brought in the January window start to kick on. But yeah, fascinating race. It's great. Top of the Premier League is brilliant this season, isn't it?
It's great to see their summer signing scoring a last minute winner for Crystal Palace. Great bit of transfer business there. What about Manchester United, obviously? What is the truth about the form at the moment? I'm asking the Man United fans in the room.
I hate to put a lot of weight on backroom teams, but I actually think, like, Ruben Amorim's backroom team, excuse me, you never heard much about them, and there wasn't much praise of them from within the camp. Steve Holland, I think, has added a lot. Jonathan Woodgate obviously can speak Spanish to a lot of these Spanish-speaking players as well. These are all the nuggets that we're looking for, Jer, behind the scenes. No, but I think...
I'm sure Ruben Amorim's team could speak Spanish.
Yeah. Speak Spanish fairly well as well.
And Portuguese.
I just think the attitude shift, it seems so... simple that you play your best players in their best positions. Play Kobbie Mainoo, for example. Play Patrick Dorgo in the wing.
So that all wears off, all right?
You'd think it would have worn off by now, no? Or even after that little couple of weeks break.
Sorry, I will let the Manchester United fans talk, but for me, the biggest thing that I take out of Monday, the biggest thing I think out of like them getting the result against West Ham is that they're not playing well anymore. They're not, and the results are following, and that's going to happen. And it's because the team makes sense, and it's because they have a little bit of confidence, and they have a little bit of belief, and they have some structure. They didn't look like they were just going to completely fold to Everton's onslaught on Monday night in the worst game of football ever played. And in the end, I wasn't really surprised when they got a breakaway goal and took it really, really well, because their attackers are in form and have confidence. But there's a huge difference in what United are doing at the moment versus what they were doing a couple of months
and
ago.
Two of the most pressurised positions, I think, in certainly in English football, European football, are Manchester United's goalkeeper and striker. And under Amorim, it was Andre Onana, who was just an accident waiting to happen, and Rasmus Højlund, who, with all due respect, wasn't ready for Premier League. He's obviously been really good in Serie A, but he's not ready for Premier League. And now they've brought in Šeško, who obviously has an aura. He's only 22. He's very, very cocky and arrogant in a good way. And then Cedi Lammens, obviously, we saw the onslaught he was subjected to at the Hill Dickinson the other night, and he was capable and ready for it. So I think those two, they were problem positions. I know Šeško's not starting games, but he's having a serious impact. And the attacking talent is just... like, that goal was made from the summer signings in Mbeumo and Cunha.
I think the slightly worrying thing is that, Mick, I think you're right, the Manchester United have kind of regressed over the last couple of weeks. The performance against Fulham was kind of in and out. The performance then against Everton, even on Monday,
And West Ham
wasn't
as well.
Great, and West Ham wasn't great. So, like, United's best football, and it has been kind of a theme since Alex Ferguson has left, is playing on the counter-attack. And what they do have is bags of pace, and they have actually players that are confidence, like Cunha, Mbeumo, and now Šeško, obviously, as well, who's banging in goals. So I would be slightly worried, even for the remainder of the season. But I think this Sunday against Palace are in a kind of notoriously struggle after European games. So I think United should have enough to beat Palace on Sunday. But for the rest of the games, they've got Villa now in 2 weeks' time at home, Old Trafford. So yeah, that's probably the proof in the pudding if Michael Carrick really is the man to take United forward.
Also the substitutions, like Ruben Amorim was taking defenders off and putting another defender on two or three times a game, like at random points, and all of a sudden now Carrick is actually making wise substitutions. He's stuck with Maguire and Martinez. I know Martinez out for a week or two, but then you have Lenny Yarrow coming in, who's been really good. Aidan Heaven is an option as well, so there's more solidity, I think, across the back four. Unless
so you don't think it's going to wear off.
Maybe look, United are going to lose games between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, they're not going to continue to get points at the rate that they've got, which is like a record breaking number.
No, I think they'll get enough points to finish certainly in the top five. I don't think the form will drop off that.
I need to finish fourth, but okay.
Benefit is that they don't have any games to worry about midweek. Like, they can literally focus on every single game, every single weekend. Like, they don't have, like, Villa are going to have the Europa League now in a couple of weeks.
Now next week, though, you know, and that's they're in everybody, they're in the same boat as everybody else then when you have the double Premier League week. So
Newcastle have had the travel to Baku and they've had like a load of games in the Carabao Cup. Like, Arsenal could play 70 games this year if everything goes well. United are going to play 40 at the maximum, so there's no excuse for Michael Carrick, there's no excuse for the backroom team of Steve Holland, Jonathan Woodgate, and there's no excuse to set, especially for the players as well. Like, they have literally nothing else to focus on and getting themselves right for one game every week, and that shouldn't be hard.
That game's 2 o'clock kickoff. I think
you know, players are pretty simplistic animals, aren't they? They want to be told what to do. And I think your point about that being put in the right positions and having, you know, whatever was going on behind the scenes with Ruben Amorim, there was a noticeable change in the players' attitudes to not only Carrick but his backroom staff. There was one I think I might have mentioned on here before, but it sticks with me, is that In the game against Manchester City, when, you know, one of the many goals that Man United scored that were chalked off, Casemiro runs off the bench and jumped on Michael Carrick's back. Like, I mean, that's his manager. Like, that's you don't do that to you. You're not doing that to Jose Mourinho. You're not doing that. And this was unannounced. He kind of wasn't aware of it. He just jumped on his back. And I just thought from that moment, there's a connection here between these players and this manager. And one thing, whether they're in good form or not, they are still having plenty of shots at goal. I think they had 11 against Everton. Everton were pretty poor, and they have been pretty poor in front of goal all season. But I think what you can say from a betting point of view, I think Manchester United will be in the games because I think they'll have a go. I don't think there's that much expectation on them really still. We know that, you know, they always get backed by customers because they're such a popular club. But, you know, if you're looking at Bruno, you're looking at Mbeumo, you're looking at Cunha. I mean, Šeško now, he scored 3 goals in his last 4 games in 88 minutes on the pitch. As a, you know, obviously we offer the impact sub. If you're backing Man United players like Bruno or Mbeumo to score, or Cunha, I think he's replaced Cunha and Ahmad recently. So you're going to get quality players come off the bench if he is still substituted to come on and finish the job for you as well. So that's, I'd want to be on Man United's side in terms of goals. If you're looking at bet builders, whatever the results are, I think they win this weekend against Palace. I think Palace will be a little bit too tired for them. But I can see Man United having a good end to the season. Maybe not quite as good as it looked beating Arsenal and Manchester City in the opening two games.
I think they're as close to nailed on to finish third. I think they have the most points out of those four teams, I think, in the rest of the season. Could I ask the two United fans a question, though, because Lee mentioned Cunha there. Like, his display on Monday night, and it's like we've seen it plenty of times. If you're a fan of that team, do you like that?
Do you mean the James Garner giving it the big one?
Yeah, but there's always a bit of that in him. He's an attitude player, and he's one of those people that opposition fans will hate.
Yeah,
he's
Jordan Pickford.
But do you like that, or do you?
I love that. Yeah, okay. Absolutely love it.
It's him.
I don't like it when it's on my teams, I have to say. I'd rather people weren't like that.
You don't like Emi Martinez?
Yeah, you love Emi Martinez.
That stuff annoys me.
I don't know.
I feel like it does more damage than good. But Emi Martinez is wasting time and I liked it when he asked why is Ronaldo not taking the penalty that time and then Fernandez missed it. That was very good. Yeah.
No, but for so many years United fans have had to deal with like under Ten Hag and Wetwipes
soft
in the dressing
players,
room. Soft players who you wouldn't see that passion from, and all of a sudden
Bruno,
you have a player.
Bruno is the like antithesis of that. Like he's like winds up opposition fans, opposition for players, and he's the only maybe player of this current year of Manchester United gets into any Manchester United team.
And he's the only popular player, really, isn't he? Like, pre-Carrick.
Yeah. United fans love that, you know, Roy Keane era, you know, getting into people's faces. So I think when Cunha or Bruno or Fernandes kind of demonstrate that on the pitch, I think that only brings back kind of positivity. Okay.
That one, as I said, 2 o'clock on Sunday, live on Off the Ball on News Talk. It's Phil Egan and Brian Kerr, I think, on duty on that one. Yeah, and then Arsenal and Chelsea is the other game on Sunday, which is a massive game, really. Certainly in the context of the title and also in the context of whether or not Chelsea are going to make it to the Champions League. Lee, what are you looking at here in terms of markets for Arsenal-Chelsea, 4:30 on Sunday?
Yeah, Arsenal 2-1 on favourites now. They kind of started to drift closer to even money, but obviously that win last weekend put them back in you know, as solid favourites. 2-1 on City are 13-8, then Manchester United are the next in the betting at 66-1. But yeah, in terms of the match itself, they're 8-13 to beat Chelsea. Which I think it's a fair price, really. The draw's 14-5. Chelsea are 4-1. Chelsea are capable. They've probably raised the game against the better teams this season. It's more like the, you know, the Burnleys where they let it slip. But for me, the Chelsea discipline is it's just a problem that just keeps coming back. And Liam Rossini hasn't been able to solve it just yet. We saw, you know, we've seen them. You know, they were playing really well against Arsenal, weren't they? In the reverse fixture until the red card, and then suddenly it becomes difficult. Arsenal were actually lambasted after that game for not going after Chelsea more. So I'd be looking at cards in this game. Between 6 and 8 cards has landed in 5 of the last 6 games between these two, and Arsenal have contributed as well. By the way, always love the Cucurella Saka battle. I'd be taking them to make over one foul each. Saka chucked in a few fouls in games like this. I think 2 in the last game against them, 2 in the game before that. And whoever Cucurella's up against, she's always liable to pick up a card. I just think that Arsenal are probably just a bit too good for them. Again, if you're looking at bet builders, then I'd be looking at shots on target from Hincapie or Saliba. Chelsea were labelled, I think it was last week, were labelled on social media as one of the worst at defending set pieces from the stats. And then, obviously, one of their players forgot their assignment, didn't they, against Burnley, as the manager put it. Obviously, you know, just dropped his man, basically.
Twice. After they conceded the equaliser, there was a free header from the six-yard box. You're like, oh, my God.
The last team you want coming at you, if that is a problem, is Arsenal. So, yeah, rather than going your shots on target with the obvious Gyökeres, who, like Šeško, is coming good, isn't he? He's finally finding his feet in the Premier League. I'd be looking at one of the defenders, maybe, to have a shot on target. They usually, again, it's not unlike them to have like at least one shot on target in a game. And obviously the prices would be a little better, but I think Arsenal just nicked this, maybe 2-1. I'm expecting a really good game. I mean, it's just how did Chelsea approach it? Does Liam Rossini just kind of go all Mourinho on it and just try and shut up shop and try and hit them on the break, which is obviously what Manchester United did successfully against them? There is like a bit of a way of doing this, isn't there? Man United set that out. So Chelsea maybe try and hit them on the break. They've got quality on the break. They've got pace on the break. So that is one way of getting into them. Chelsea to win at 4-1 is a good price. And obviously, if you're going Chelsea to win, you wouldn't expect them to win 2-0. So you'd probably have to go Chelsea to win and both teams to score, which is obviously like, you know, you're getting a really nice price about that. 4-1 just for the win. I'm just checking it hasn't changed the win and both teams to score for Chelsea, but that's the way I'd probably play it. 8-1 Chelsea to win and both teams to score, which is probably the only way they're going to win.
Yeah, I'm very reluctant to pile in on Arsenal at this stage and be like, especially when you don't know what's happened in the Man City game. Maybe that's stupid, because either way, whatever happens in the Man City game, if Leeds win, the pressure ratchets up on Arsenal. It's like, oh, you can win the league this week, which obviously is not true, factually incorrect, but psychologically it's like, ah, oh, strike a blow. And like, oh no, Jesus, we can't do that. If Man City win, it's like, ooh, pressure's on. It's like, oh, pressure's on. What are we going to do? So either way, I don't know. I just...
It's Arsenal's form has been hurtling up and down like a rocket. You know, there's no real rhyme or reason to it. So it's like, there's absolutely a chance that Chelsea could go and just rattle them this weekend. I'm not sure I'd pick it though.
In fairness,
you know what I mean? I do think Chelsea, we're not like Lee talked about it with their discipline. So like, but the focus is a lot on Arsenal, but Chelsea are a basket case as well. Like they're all over the place. You know, you just don't know what you're expecting from one week to another with them. I don't trust them. I have to say you could in any given game, they could beat Arsenal this week, and you wouldn't know what would happen with them for the rest of the season. But they were good in the game at Stamford Bridge, and obviously Caicedo getting sent off kind of ruined any chances they had of probably winning that game, even though they went ahead.
Yeah.
But they matched up well to Arsenal. And then in the League Cup semi-final,
The second game they did nothing. Mm. But in fairness, on I know the Leeds Man City game tomorrow at 5:30 is a huge game. But in fairness to Arsenal, any time Man City have won, Arsenal they've played first. Arsenal, when playing second, have always backed it up. So in fairness to Arteta and the squad, like I've kind of questioned them numerous times, but they have backed it up and they have been good when City have put the pressure on. I think the game, I know, the Premier League has been great to watch and all this season. I don't think it really has. Like, I think it's been pretty, the football has been pretty poor. And I think Arsenal are like the chief benefit, the chief benefactors of this.
And cause of that.
And cause of it as well. So like, if I'm going to spend most of my Sunday afternoon watching Declan Rice kind of waiting to take a corner, like I just don't enjoy it. But I think Chelsea are flimsy and susceptible at set pieces. So I don't see anything other than an Arsenal win, especially at home at the in the Emirates. You know, Chelsea needs to, for their own ambitions of making the top five, needs a big performance, and I just don't see it under this manager or senior at all.
Do you think Chelsea win more than one in five of these games against Arsenal?
So I do, yeah.
At the Emirates,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, Arsenal are unbeaten against Chelsea in the last 10 games.
Yeah. Tough for them to beat them.
So maybe not then.
I think Arsenal will have benefited from the week off, the midweek off.
Yeah.
Because I'd say there was a bit of an emotional pitch with
from
the
last
Spurs
week,
game.
There was.
You know, and I think going into another massive London derby, another massive must-win game on like Tuesday or Wednesday this week, I think it would have been a struggle, you know. But I think they've probably had time to kind of get their stuff together and they're focused fully on this now. They've gone Sunday to Sunday.
Yeah,
should be in good shape.
First midweek they haven't played since the early part of December.
Okay, so we expect a high energy, high octane performance from them on Sunday afternoon. That's the half-four kickoff.
Half-four game, yeah. Stephen Doyle, Keith Tracy on commentary.
The other thing that's happened to Arsenal in the last 20 minutes, they've been drawn against Bayer Leverkusen, and then if they win that, which they will be favourites to do, they will play Bodo Glimt or Sporting for a place in the semi-finals of the Champions League. If you'd hand-drawn...
Yeah,
your path to the semi-finals. So they're going to be feeling pretty good about life.
And even as much as like the actual draw itself is really beneficial, but there was a sense of even like European teams really struggling with Arsenal this year in general with their physicality and everything like that. And I was thinking about this draw this morning before it happened. I was like, the only thing that really stops Arsenal going very far is it them getting a Chelsea or even a Newcastle, you know what I mean? Getting one of the English teams. Now, it turns out their only stop on the path to the final is a possible Spurs trip, which I think they've shown they can take care of that one without much problem. If it's in a Champions League semi-final, who's to say? Spurs have obviously gone on some kind of a run to get there.
A trip to the Arctic Circle in the quarterfinal against Bodo Glimt.
Yeah, like that's a terrible draw to get, especially at that time of the season as well.
Sporting will beat them though, will they?
Well, we said that like numerous times, and Bodo Glimt got to Europa League semi-final last year.
I think everybody would take Bodo Glimt at this stage.
Of course you do.
They were brilliant. Even in the
every fairy tale dies.
Yeah,
we
but
know
this
that.
Is like the it's like that Ajax 2019 team, the team that most reminds me of that Ten Hag team under back in 2019, and they should have got to a final. So I wouldn't be
It's a great draw for Arsenal. Come on.
It's a great draw, but like they still have to beat the teams. And also Barcelona are on that side as well. So
yeah, no, look, it's semi-final. They're still going to be going deep into those. And maybe that's not great for their league credentials. One question that I don't know, maybe you might be able to answer us with some closer than us knowledge, Lee. 5:30 on a Saturday evening at Elland Road, will they have the lights on or will they not?
Lights definitely on.
Crucial.
Yeah, just about. They'll put them on anyway, won't they? Because of that amazing stat they've got. Arsenal, by the way, 4-6 to win that game, and 11-4 favourites to win the Champions League. But yeah, I was talking about this Leeds game. I'm in West Yorkshire. I'm not a Leeds fan, but I'm surrounded by them. And there's something about, I mean, obviously Elland Road, it's a cliche, but it's true. It's a remarkable stadium. I covered them for a few years as a football reporter when they were in the Premier League and when they went down to the Championship way back. And yeah, amazing, amazing ground. It's one of those grounds that the noise is just, it kind of almost feels like it can suck the ball into the net. This is a huge ask, though, isn't it, against Manchester City, who are starting to find their feet a little bit. And I think the Man City players will react to that great atmosphere. I don't think it'll inhibit them at all. They're well used to it, aren't they? But it's an incredible, you know, like we often refer to stats about teams who don't have good records against teams going back 20 games or whatever, and players scoring again, and there's different managers and different players and different owners. Well, this just seems to be turn the lights on, make it dark, and Leeds United play better, because I don't know what it is that happens. But well, maybe if we think it's going to be a little bit light at kickoff, maybe we go Man City to win the first half. Lights are on, dark, Leeds win the second half. but I think it's a good bet builder again. I think, like, you know, check out the epic boosts on these games are going to be really good. They're not released yet, but I've got a suspicion now Haaland is back scoring. It may well be an epic boost on Haaland scoring this game. He's got a good record against the club he supported as a lad, of course. He was born in Leeds. Foden's got goals against Leeds and assists. Dominic Calvert-Lewin scored at the Etihad. So, yeah, I think really good for a bet builder. Why would Leeds sit back? Just go for it. You've got nothing to lose. They're in a good position. I know that, you know, it's always dangerous that you've got that, the relegation isn't too far away. But this won't be one of those games where they've thought, yeah, we'll get 3 points here. They'd be more than happy with a point. So just go for it. What was it, 3-2 in the reverse fixture?
Yeah.
Really go good for performance.
I can see something yeah. similar.
I've just checked. City will go for it. Sunset in Leeds is at 5:41 p.m. tomorrow. So the first 11 minutes will be all City, and then we'll see what Leeds can do.
The lights on, though, aren't they? The lights on. They'll somehow find a way of making it dark. Close the roof. There's no closable roof. But so it's going to be fascinating. It's really, really interesting. City around a similar price to beat Leeds as Arsenal are to beat Chelsea, by the way. But yeah, you've got all your ACCA boost available. So if you're having an accumulator, four or more picks activates that. Remember, Final One Standing, new €20,000 league goes live at 3 p.m. Saturday. There's a couple of 20,000 pots that could be going over the weekend. One went last week. Palace winning, won one punter, €20,000 alone. So these pots are going every week at the moment. Chelsea not winning last week, took out like 60% of players. So it's, we're really getting to the business end of a few of those pots. So if you haven't played yet or you're not in a league, then that one opens up and ready to get your picks in by 3 p.m. Saturday.
Lee, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Pleasure. Enjoy the weekend.
That's that, by the way. In the 24 league or playoff matches that Leeds have hosted after 5 o'clock since August 2023, they are yet to taste defeat.
Jesus.
Under Farke, United have won 20 and drawn 4 when the floodlights are on at Elland Road.
That's mad.
Wow. And I like, they have a good overall record, but I presume it is significantly worse in the daytime then, is it? We don't have that.
Yeah.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
Like vampires.
Why, Jasmine?
As in, like, we don't have the stat of what they're... Because they have a generally good record, but no. It's certainly not undefeated at 25.
What an early kickoff.
Is that one not good enough?
It is, but it's just...
Oh, give me more.
How does it contrast?
The sun is in an awkward position at 12:30 on a Saturday afternoon as well in Leeds. You always notice the sun is blinding for the opposition keeper generally, so they have a good record in the early kickoff, I'd imagine.
I can't get over Leeds. Watched them again against Villa last week. I don't know how they are so far down the table. They seem to get a result every week. I know that it's like, I've said this before, and I know obviously that's must not be factually true, but sometimes you get a feeling about a team. They're just a really hard team to beat. They are missing. There is a bit of a quality deficit. You would think that over the course of 90 minutes, City should be able to break them down in the kind of form they're in. Arsenal obviously hammered them twice this year. But other than that, they're really hard out.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable to me that they aren't eighth or ninth in the table, given the performances they put in every single week.
The draws, they've 10 draws. Only Bournemouth have more draws than them. So they're such a tough team to beat, but maybe they need to pick up more
Leeds
wins.
Fans in my life, ask me about West Ham scores and all, and I'm like, what do you care about West Ham scores? It's we're only 6 points. I'm like, you couldn't possibly be. It's like, no matter how many times I look at the table, I can't believe it that they're in any sort of relegation fear.
Yeah, it's going to be a cracker. And Nico O'Reilly is a number 10, by the way. Everyone was talking about him as a left-back option for England.
I haven't seen that Irish.
I know, But versatile.
Too late, is it?
Possibly.
He might not even be qualified.
No, it's a Jamaican ancestry. Yes.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's Cork, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turns out. Liverpool, West Ham, 3 o'clock on Saturday. I can't.
This is a massive game.
I don't. Yeah.
I'm not buying
Liverpool at the moment. That's why I should just cash out. I can't buy Liverpool. I can't buy Chelsea. I actually think Man United are going to have a tricky run.
Yeah, and Villa have, according to, like, I don't know who compiles these sort of lists, but with some sort of data, Villa have apparently what is the easiest run in. Now, that scares me because I'm more confident with Villa against teams that'll have a go at them at the moment, especially without Tielemans. And I'd be really worried about, like, Molyneux tonight, like, you know, but at the same time, Villa will pick up points. They're not going to just, like, disappear and it'll just leave the other three to crawl over the line. So, like, Liverpool or Chelsea in particular, I kind of think United are grand. Liverpool or Chelsea are just, they're going to have to do something.
Mm.
And at the moment, it doesn't feel like they're doing anything. Chelsea went on this big unbeaten run that was, like, unbelievably unimpressive. Yeah. And a few people kind of just righted them into, you know, a place and into, like, a showing a bit of form. I didn't think that form was evident. And I think the results in the last couple of weeks have shown that, like.
Yeah, Florian Wirtz is now out for an unspecified amount of time. So, and he was actually, I think he was playing well even at the start of the season, but maybe without getting the plaudits. And the last couple of weeks, he's been, I think, at the centre of everything good that Liverpool have done attacking wise. Mo Salah's on the worst scoring drought of his career in the Premier League. So, yeah, I have serious questions. And West Ham have shown over the last couple of weeks against Man United and against other teams as well that, yeah, that they can actually put a, you know, a bit of a structure on their team. And Nuno's getting a bit of a tune out of the front two and Castellanos and Jared Bowen up there as well. So, like, this is a really...
They're a better form than Liverpool at the moment,
yeah,
aren't they?
Like, probably better away from home than at home, West Ham as well. Like, yeah. I know they should have beaten Chelsea away from home with the wins against Burnley and other teams recently as well on the road. That's a nervy game for a Liverpool fan, I think. Like, that performance last week was so, so bad in the first half. Obviously, they improved, but possibly didn't deserve the win, ultimately. No. But, like, I think Spurs are going to be watching this game very nervously, thinking West Ham could get something here and really draw Spurs into the relegation battle.
Who are Forest playing?
Brighton.
The Spurs thing is just, like, Spurs-Fulham is a massive game this weekend.
Yeah.
Like, it is. Like, Brighton had a good win last week, but they're not in form either. You'd kind of fancy... Watching Forest last week, just see they seem like a much better team than their results have shown. And obviously they got rid of Dyche,
so they
might play a bit more football, which I think suits them better, given the players they have, doesn't it?
I think they're a hamstring under Dyche, to be honest. But I think under Pereira, he's still a defensively solid kind of coach, but they still have loads of quality. Like those two midfielders, I was watching about the game last night against Fenerbahce, like Sangare and Elliot Anderson are linked to go to some of the top teams in the Premier League.
Murillo,
Milenkovic, Igor Jesus, the striker. Gibbs White is a hell of a player.
They have a really good squad of players, all right, but for whatever reason, they are in a funk. And I mean, while they won the tie, they didn't play well in that game, did they?
No, but no, they didn't. And
they didn't need to.
They knew their place, didn't they? Yeah. Really? They needed that goal.
Yeah, it went 2-0 and you're kind of thinking, but it was a bit of a harsh penalty, I thought. But in fairness, like, Forest, I think just they have too much quality to kind of... Maybe they've too much quality not to be relegated, like, you know.
But are Spurs like a sinking ship? Like, is that, like, you know what I mean? It's like people say, oh, they're, you know, they've 6 points or whatever it is over West Ham. They're not going to be 6 points, you know. And you would think that, like, even if you take
it's only
take,
four now,
take 4 points, whatever. Mm. So, but take quality out of it or whatever. But at some point, you have to say, like, where are they going to get a result from?
Yeah.
Like, I don't fancy them this weekend. Do you?
No.
Fulham are, on current form, a much better team than them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And even like playing that system of the three at the back and playing Pelinha.
Strange.
Like, I just, and before, like this time last week, I was saying, oh yeah, Tudor's got a good tune out of all the teams he's gone into towards the end of the season, but
no guarantee.
I mean, they were absolutely abysmal last Sunday, especially in the derby game where they just offered absolutely nothing.
And yet Colo Muani has the goal disallowed. Richarlison has a great chance, cleared off the line, like ifs and buts, but Arsenal were the better team.
Yeah.
I saw Paul Scholes and Nicky Butt talking about this during the week, but I was wondering, would it be the most shocking relegation in the Premier League era? I know obviously Villa went down.
No, Newcastle, Villa were ready down to go down. Newcastle was a shock, but they were in the funk as well. The Spurs, definitely.
This is the biggest one.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Spurs just won the Europa League.
Yeah.
They're in the Champions League.
Yeah, fair enough. Like, question answered.
I think it's a fascinating game though against Fulham, because I know a lot of clamour from Spurs fans. They want obviously Pochettino back in the summer, but I think like Marco Silva's contract is coming to the end at Fulham. Like, I think he would be a good manager for Spurs.
Why would he do it though? Why, if you're Marco Silva, why?
Look, well,
like, I know it's bigger club, yes.
Yeah. Somebody is going to go in there and they will start spending money equivalent to their revenue on wages. That will increase some of those injuries will clear up and,
If you trust yourself, that's still a good job.
And they've literally come out this week saying that we're going to change our policies and we're going to actually go and spend a lot of money next summer. So,
yeah. if they're not in the Championship.
To win the Championship.
One quick stat that's unverified.
That's what we
Spurs
love.
Spurs and Fulham, the most transfers between two clubs in Premier League history.
Jesus, is it?
Yeah. Like, I used to do a round in the quiz, and they were... It was an endless one. It was an endless one picking.
Berbatov played for both, but he definitely did.
Simon Davis. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and there's loads. Ryan Sessegnon.
The keeper, and Casey Keller played for both. No, maybe not.
Yeah. Well, anyway, there's loads.
Good quiz question, Mick. Yeah. Mark it down.
Do you know actually the real answer?
It's Spurs and Fulham.
Everton Villa.
No, I don't know if that's true though. Well, you gotta,
what about the carousel of the VAT carousel thing they had going on?
Maybe I did this before everybody was trying to cheat PSR. Maybe Villa and Everton have taken over.
In the last five seasons, between 2021, 2024, 25 seasons, it was Villa and Everton of 6, Bournemouth and Leeds of 6, Newcastle and Forest of 6, Villa and Luton of 5. Villa doing a lot of.
Ross Barkley.
Finding a lot of friendly deals. The Spurs Fulham thing.
That's about this was Premier League history, though. Yeah.
Okay.
Back to Gordon and Mick.
Are you happy with Aston Villa's draw in the bracket for the Europa League?
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
All happened as we were going in, so people were only
Lille, Aston Villa.
That's a tough one.
Yes, it is. Away in the first time. The winners of that play, Bologna or Roma, and all Roman.
Ferguson.
He won't be back.
He won't be there.
No.
Beat Bologna in the 2 years in a row. Don't want to play them again.
Can Daniel Malin play that game? He can't he? If he could.
He can in Europe, yeah. I don't like this draw so far at all. These are the best teams in the bloody
And then the winners of that play Stuttgart, Porto, Forest, or Midtjylland. And then you're through to the final.
Stuttgart looked good against Celtic in the first leg.
They can win it.
Thank God I can't have an All English final again.
Yeah,
God, can't go for that again.
Where's the final on this year?
Istanbul.
Yeah. I've looked up flights.
Have you?
Yeah, too expensive for me.
Yeah, I was there last year in Bilbao. Let's not talk about that.
Yeah, let's forget about that.
All right, anybody else want to talk about? Go on.
Just a 12:30 tomorrow is an interesting game. Bournemouth have beaten in 7 and Sunderland have Xhaka back, but they're still on a bit of a slide. So I think that'll be an interesting game, even though it doesn't maybe spring out as like
a bad TV game for this time of year, though, isn't it? Because it's fair, like, there's only 11 games left, and neither team have anything to achieve.
And Burnley Brentford, Keith Andrews, first game after his new contract, obviously, long term contract. Bad result for them last week. I said it on the show this morning. I thought it was impressive that they gave him the contract in the week where they just lost a game at home. It's a proper rubber stamp, like, look, you're doing the right things here. Long contract, 2032, but I'm sure he's on a hell of a lot more money now than he was last week.
Yeah.
Well deserved.
Yeah. 2032.
That's a more like an amortization thing, like what Chelsea have been doing, I think.
How much is he on? What do you think?
Only 6 years away.
Yeah, it's per year, isn't the coaches? Jesus, I don't know.
Would
it be five or six million? No.
Surely they're all per year. I don't understand why we're still talking in per week, like they're all minors or something like that.
Sorry, I'm way over egging it there, but.
I'd say two would be doing great, wouldn't he?
No. Hopefully it goes up over the course of the contract,
Like
I'll get more for the payoff when they sack him eventually.
No, when he's poached by Chelsea.
He won't get a payoff then.
That would be brilliant.
For seniors replacement.
I don't know. Like the one thing is, like, if Brentford do manage to qualify for Europe, like, it's a much different season as what Crystal Palace have seen this year. If you have to balance both the Premier League and European football.
Same for Carrick next year, possibly.
Yeah. Palace did sell all their best players. Just from underneath the manager.
So did Brentford,
But that's the Palace model. Palace have done that for like ages. So
Thiago will be gone this summer, won't
Brentford.
He?
He signed a new contract.
Shada, but that's to get more money from. Shada, I really like, I think, even when he's not. Except
like
when
Brentford
he's
know they're going to sell them at a certain point, whereas Palace were like, oh shit, we've just sold Eberechi Eze. Have we got a replacement? We don't.
No. Oh. Yeah.
So shocking.
Yeah, Brentford have their work done, I think, with regards picking players.
Mm. It's funny, we don't really think, obviously Keith's only in the job a little while, but he's also kind of like Irish and known to the English media, so he's never going to be kind of like attracting attention in the way Iriola or Hertzler or, you know, these guys would be. Is he in that, like, surely, if he does this again next season,
they'll
start sniffing around for the big jobs, won't they?
Dion on the news round was making the point that, unfortunately, Thomas Frank has shat the bed so horrifically
that Brentford are almost ruined.
Just that there's like what was the rationale behind getting him? He looked really good at that club. Is that club the reason that everybody looks good? Mm. And look, if they were to do well and say they manage a European campaign and finish again in the European places in the Premier League, I was like, okay, he can do everything.
Yeah.
Get him in. And at that point, you're like, okay. But the thing is, he could go to a European club happily, I suspect. And maybe.
I'd say he'd be better suited than most people have come through the English game to go to a European club.
I'd really love to see Nathan Collins. He had a horrible mistake last week, but it could now be the time to play some football across the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Hamer in the papers today saying he won't be playing in midfield and they're not going to be bringing anybody new in as well. So that interview, I think, is with Gavin Comiskey in tomorrow's Irish Times. You're saying Bournemouth have nothing to play for, right? But Bournemouth are to Chelsea as Chelsea are to Villa in the table, a point behind.
Yeah, all right. 7 points behind Chelsea. That surprised me. They've been on a good run lately, obviously. Yeah. They had kind of stunk out the joint a little before that. And Brentford are in that position as well. I suppose you've just watched enough football this year to think that it's not necessarily that nobody can finish above
Chelsea,
nobody can
Liverpool.
Finish sixth above Chelsea or Liverpool
or Villa.
But I just don't think that anyone outside of that group of six there now can finish in the top five.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I'd be just very, very surprised because it would take three of the teams almost to go on a bad run. You know,
Bournemouth would need to go on an incredible run, but they do have their run of fixtures are Sunderland, Brentford, Burnley. And then they've got United, Arsenal, Newcastle. So, anyway, all right.
Excuse me. Sorry.
You're excused. And that's the end of the show.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.